this time around, we are hitting a case that hits close to home for me in several ways, as it involves some gaming roots, online harassment, and it actually happened where I grew up in Kent, Washington, which is a city about 20 miles south of Seattle. So with this story, we go all the way back to fall of 2012 to a married couple known as Courtney and Stephen Allen. They're a fairly normal, geeky couple that like to spend their free time playing an online game called Grepolis. And I'm not going to get too deep into the nerdy gaming vernacular with this game, but just know that the basics of it is that it is an online game where you form alliances to build up an ancient Greek empire.
So would it be typical that husband aligns with wife, or is it more likely that they're in different rooms, sort of maybe aligned, maybe not?
I'm a terrible judge for that, considering my wife's desk is literally 2 feet away from me and we play games together. But with it being a browser-based game, they could have played anywhere in the house.
Sure. I mean, and that's what I was trying to ask and didn't ask it well, is like, I've seen couples who sort of automatically are on the same team because that's how the game is set up. And I've seen it where it really doesn't matter. You're playing as two individuals and you figure that out.
Or you're like my wife and I, and we purposefully play against each other just to fuck each other's over.
I accept this. So, okay. So you're playing against each other. So, I'm sorry, Stephen and Courtney, is that?
Yes, Stephen and Courtney Allen.
And were they against each other or with each other?
They were with each other.
Okay.
So as the couple's group of players and alliance that they had formed had begun to grow, they ended up receiving a message from an Arizona player named Todd Zonis. He was looking to jump from one of the rival groups that was against them over to their group, which, I mean, sure, keep your friends close and enemies closer, so why not?
So the way you say that makes it sound like you think this was a spy kind of maneuver, or no?
From a gamer standpoint, that's what I would have assumed. But once we dig a little bit deeper into it, it seems that he was just looking for a new group. Because shortly after Todd had joined their group, Courtney, who was going by the username of SharkLady76, received a message from Todd making a comment that he himself used to own a shark.
I'm sorry. He used to say it again for me, please, because I'm pretty sure you just said he used to own a shark.
And her username was SharkLady76. So instantly, they had something in common.
Used to own a shark. Awesome. Okay.
So Courtney quickly took a liking to Todd, saying, quote, "He was rude and crude, and I thought it was actually kind of funny."
And he owned a shark.
Aside from the shark, the two did have a lot in common, as they would talk about the pets that they had, various gardening that they enjoyed, as well as the fact that they were both married. As their friendship and conversations continued to blossom, much like anybody who has friends on the internet, or as Kate and I are now talking to each other.
I'm saying two married couples. I'm following along. Yep.
Had a friendship that blossomed into chatting over video.
And a podcast, yeah.
And a podcast. So as those conversations began to grow deeper, much like their friendship, Todd began to become an escape for Courtney. Courtney was a stay-at-home mother with a new toddler, and Stephen, being the breadwinner, was working late nights and traveling as an IT instructor to support the family.
And toddlers are short, drunken adults. That's what they are. It's like constantly negotiating with the enemy.
So the toddler should have played Grepolis with them.
I would have kicked ass.
With all the time that Stephen was spending focusing on work to support the family, Courtney started to grow angry with him, calling him neglectful and controlling. Which I'm sure came up in conversations with Todd.
Well, I've been around toddlers and I've been married with a toddler and I get it. Like, I get that feeling of, he expects more logic to be happening, and you're like, all of the logic in my life has evaporated.
Plus, Stephen would have the escape traveling for work.
That's what I'm saying, is that he has a logical life still. You know, fundamentally, his life has not shifted, and people still speak to him with respect, and they don't rub fecal matter in his hair, and it's just sort of...
I mean, he is an IT instructor. We don't know.
It's true. I think we know. And and just, it's really hard. Like, I was lucky in that I took about a year off with each of my kids. And then right around the time that they turned into tyrants, I went back to work. And I was able to avoid that and still be myself some. But when you're home alone with the toddler all the time, you lose yourself. And there's a phrase that I love because it works, is you're no longer somebody, you're somebody's mother.
Yeah.
And so if you find somebody online, doesn't matter, male, female, or shark, they're talking to you like you're interesting and they're invested in you, like that can be the only time you get that all week.
And so fast forward a year, Stephen found himself, as the IT instructor that he was, working on Courtney's laptop, which he then came to find those conversations that Courtney was having with Todd. And as you had pointed out, I didn't pull the actual quote, but basically Courtney said a lot of the same things of, he made me feel important. He told me everything I wanted to hear.
Yeah. I mean, let me flail and put it out there that I never had this deal of like problems with Willem. Okay, that's important because communication. I was able to look at him and be like, you know, yes, you just walked in the door after a long day at work and I feel for you and take these fucking kids because I'm leaving. Like, and go out for a little while or go spend time with friends or whatever. But if you don't have that, it's easy to fall apart.
So in finding those emails, not only were they just full of compliments from Todd and these in-depth conversations about how great Courtney is and whatnot, but there was also mentions of explicit pictures and videos having been exchanged between the two as well.
Whoops.
So Stephen, of course, confronted Courtney, and in a very angry exchange, Courtney finally agreed that she would end their friendship with Todd. So the end, right?
This story sucks if that's the end.
Of course not.
What happens to the shark, Derek? I need to know what happens to the shark.
Well, the shark is left in limbo because Courtney decides that instead of just ending this conversation for the sake of her marriage, she then moves it to a password-protected tablet instead, going so far as to keep Todd hidden behind a fake name and contact info.
Oh, dear. Courtney.
So shifting over to Stephen, who still feels that his marriage is weakening as Courtney is spending more and more time on her tablet, did what anyone else would do in this situation. He went to the internet, specifically Google, to find help.
Like Dr. Google, but bigger.
Eventually, he came across a website called Marriage Builders that calls itself, quote, the number one infidelity support site on the internet.
Oh, no. That doesn't sound good at all.
Oh, it gets better.
I bet.
The website, among the normal recommendations and suggestions of meeting each other's needs and communicating what needs to be fixed in this marriage, also mentions the extreme measure for those that are continuing infidelity, that the spouse should make the affairs public as transparency is the true basis of love.
Oh my God. No. Oh my God. My head hurts. No. Bad shark. No.
So fast forward even from here. At this point, we're about 2 years in.
I don't want to fast forward anymore.
2014. A year after Stephen had found the original emails, and after many failed attempts to get Courtney on board with his internet research self-therapy, Stephen came across Courtney's tablet, which this time was unlocked as she was taking a shower. As Stephen was continuing to see his marriage falling apart, he decided, of course, to check the tablet, and found more messages being similar to the past ones from Zonis.
Yeah.
Realizing the infidelity had continued, Stephen realized that he would need a more extreme intervention via Marriage Builders.
Oh.
And decided to make everything public.
Oh, no.
With Marriage Builder's advice of, quote, exposure helps prevent a recurrence of the offense. Your closest friends and relatives will be keeping an eye on you, holding you accountable.
I always feel like Somebody's watching. Oh my God, I hate this so much. Keep going. This is great.
So Stephen did just that. He contacted his parents, Courtney's parents.
No, I hate this so much.
As well as Zonis's wife and family, to expose the affair in hopes that it would somehow save the marriage.
Going back to the communication thing, like, I don't care what you do with which part when, as long as everybody knows, as long as there's communication here. But like, oh, I hate it. I hate it so much. Oh, keep going. I love it.
So while Stephen did this, of course, it turned into arguments and talks of possible divorce between Stephen and Courtney. However, Todd saw it as a direct attack on his family by Stephen, which, fair.
It kind of was. Kind of was.
Todd stated that the information caused not only his wife, but also his parents to turn against him, resulting in them writing him out of a will that would have seen him inheriting more than $2 million.
Huh.
So not only do we have broken relationships, we have now involved money.
Now you got money in it, right? That's what we talked about before. As soon as you get money in the thing gets bad.
So Todd, feeling attacked, decided to retaliate by sending a handful of abusive emails to Stephen, which he denies. He states that maybe it was one of his friends that knew of what happened and was kind of acting on his behalf. But this whole time, Courtney is still talking to Todd. And Todd is making claims that Stephen is continuing to harass him. The way he does this is by sending emails supposedly from Stephen to Courtney stating multiple threatening things. Courtney and Stephen finally decide to use that one tool that Kate has mentioned multiple times at this point of communication. Ooh. And showed the emails to each other, which is when Courtney realizes that Todd has been twisting everything Stephen was saying to use against them.
Do you have any examples?
Basically, it was things like, you know, you're attacking us, you're trying to tear us apart, we want nothing to do with you. He also pulled from the Marriage Builder's website a post that Stephen had that was basically an email to his wife about apologizing and seeing it from her viewpoint that the relationship itself was abusive and toxic, and he apologizes for that. Well, then Todd would turn around and say, oh, well, he's abusing you.
Sure, okay.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, he acknowledges it, so it must be true. That kind of...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, finally coming across the fact that Todd was lying, Courtney decided, along with Stephen, that they would just distance themselves from interacting with Zonis.
Better late than never?
Yeah, so that just fueled Todd's hatred even more. This led to him constantly emailing the couple and calling them, and going so far as Todd calling Courtney's mother.
This is a fucking soap opera.
Now, there were multiple mentions of different things that were said, like put that expletive Courtney on the phone, things like that. And one of the voicemails going so far as to say, quote, I will burn myself to the ground to get him. I told you, you're going to lose him one way or the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do people talk that way? Like, that's always, like, I hear it all the time. Like, often enough that it must be true. The internet says that it must be true. About, like, if I can't have you, no one can.
Yeah.
People must talk that way. And if somebody spoke like that to me, I'd be like, all right, fuck off. Like.
This is just a fedora away from m'lady emails, basically.
I mean. It really is. And what about the shark?
The shark does not make another appearance.
Oh, I damn well gonna.
So as the Allens continue to ignore the threats, you know, just quit thinking about it, it'll go away. More harassment continued to come in. First of which were from new email addresses, sending them the same vitreous hate speech that the other ones had, from email addresses such as Courtney the Horse blog at blogspot.com.
It's not funny.
And you are a selfish cocksucker at no one will ever really love you.com.
Oh, no. That domain name is probably not open now, is it? That's really sad.
And eventually moving to emails to Stephen's coworkers and family, which would spoof Stephen's email address to seem like he had sent them, that would include lewd images and videos that Courtney had originally sent to Todd.
Okay.
So through all of this bullshit, let's go ahead and take another step forward, this time to March of 2015. So at this point, 3 years. Courtney finally decides that enough is enough and that she wants to file a protection order against Saunas after the continued online harassment, which, duh.
It's about fucking time, yeah.
Just 2 days after that order was granted, it was immediately broken, as Courtney then received yet another email saying, quote, "Glad that bullshit symbolic gesture is out of the way." Which, again, Saunas denies that he had sent.
Uh-huh. I mean, there's ways to prove that.
We'll get into that, yeah.
Okay.
But despite the breaking of the order, when the Allens then went to the Kent police, there were no charges filed. And as Stephen says, it was mainly because the police could not follow up, as all of the evidence, most of which had been coming through from anonymous means, was hard to prove that Saunas was continuing to be an aggressor.
It is. I mean, it is hard. But you can at least prove what, the IP address, right?
Right.
Where it came from, which device.
So meanwhile, despite this protection order, the harassment did continue and eventually grew worse.
He's not going to just step back down. If his efforts aren't working, he's not going to be like, oh, well.
I mean, I'd give up, but I'm lazy sometimes.
You're not a motherfucking stalker.
True.
Okay, so just that.
So the Allens would then come to find fake Facebook accounts with those nude pictures that were originally emailed. They would get threatening calls to Courtney's workplace, which, according to the story from Wired, I guess her coworkers kind of knew what was going on and said, she's not here right now. Can I take a message and shit like that just to kind of piss him off a little bit more, which I think is great.
It's the right move.
But it didn't stop there. No. It even went so far that the Allens ended up coming home to find a shipped box to their house full of marijuana, which, keeping in mind, this is 2015, so before legalization within Washington State. But after they decided that, you know, we should contact the police, because what else are you going to do with a box of weed other than, you know, smoke it?
I don't know.
They were then informed by the police showing up that they had received various Crime Stoppers calls from an anonymous number stating that they were selling drugs to high school kids.
I mean, maybe they were. Probably not. Let's go with not.
Now fed up with the lack of help from the local police, Stephen finally remembered that he was given a referral by a coworker that he should contact a recently created project to help victims of, quote, technology-enabled abuse, this being the Cyber Civil Rights Legal Project at K&L Gates Law Firm.
I can't say that right now, so.
So the hope obviously being that the large firm could put an end to the harassment just by presence alone, without having to take everything to court.
Well, I mean, going through court didn't stop him. Sure. Okay, go.
After initial disbelief by K&L, just from how absurd the entire story is, they decided to interview the couple separately to corroborate the stories and to start combing through the evidence before finally agreeing to take the case.
As you should.
As you should. So, another leap forward, this time to June of 2015, and K&L does finally file a lawsuit against Saunas, which they put as, quote, seeking damages and relief related to defamation, negligence, intentional infliction of emotional distress, electronic impersonation, and invasion of privacy.
Who was the negligence toward? Like, was it just at Todd, or was it at Todd and his internet provider?
You know, it didn't really go into that. I would assume it was negligence for the distribution of lewd images, would be my guess.
I don't know. I don't think that's not, you know, negligence is like you had every reason to know something was about to happen and you didn't prevent it. But that doesn't apply if you're the actor.
True.
So it's negligence would be if there's, okay, if, okay, never mind. I think I, if they're buying into the story that Todd was saying, my friend wrote that email, I didn't write that email.
Oh, yeah, that could be.
That could be it. Okay, cool. Not cool. Not cool at all, but, you know.
But basically, they decided to tack on enough legal mumbo-jumbo that it should have scared anyone off, which, of course, it didn't. So they went to court, as more harassing emails and calls were still continuing to happen, all the way up to the trial in March 2017.
Yep.
As they finally did go to trial, we had K&L backing the Allens, and Zonis now representing himself after cycling through several lawyers.
What is the saying? he who represents himself has a fool for a client? Fool for a lawyer? Both. I don't know. Benjamin Franklin said it, and he was totally right. Don't do that. Don't. Get a lawyer.
So, as the trial proceeded, many of the arguments that the law firm and the couple were worried about did come to light. And it's a lot of what we hear when it comes to victim blaming online. They were blaming Courtney that the pictures appearing online were her own fault that she sent. Some of those that were present being questioned for jury saw it as a trivial waste of time, just questioning why they were there over petty Facebook squabbles. But despite this, they did proceed with the trial. And as the Allens had over 1,000, I want to say it was like 1,083 documented cases of evidence, Zonis's only defense that he showed up with was I can't remember how it's worded now. It's basically a forensic expert for technology.
Yeah.
To come on and testify that there was a possibility that Zonis's IP address and time zones could have been falsified. Although his star witness, this expert that he brought in, also stated that he has never seen it actively used.
Is that possible? Do you know? Like, isn't that the point of an IP address?
It is possible. I mean, we see it a lot now. And granted, this is 2017, so not that long ago. We see it now with like phone number spoofing where you'll get a call and it's from the White House, things like that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same idea. So it is possible, but it doesn't really happen.
I don't like it.
On top of that defense, Zonis did also say that the reason he wasn't able to produce his sides of those emails and things like that, that he was trying to say that Steven wrote, was because Steven had installed a virus on his computer by sending an image file, and that is what caused the time zones and IP being falsified, which wouldn't be how that would work.
What did Todd do for a living? Do we know?
He was a music engineer, sound engineer, freelancer kind of job.
Okay. I mean, because that sounds like the kind of thing that somebody who knows just enough about, like, don't open these files that are attached to your emails, they might have a virus, that kind of thing. Like, he knows just enough to be afraid of it, but not enough to know what actually is and is not a threat to your computer and things like that.
And not enough to, I don't know, use a VPN so his IP address wasn't on every email.
And I know what that is. So
yeah.
I don't know what it stands for, but I know what it is.
So a VPN is a virtual private network. Basically, it takes your IP address, the code string of numbers from your computer, bounces it to another one that then basically represents you as you go about the internet. So everything's going to tie to that representative IP address versus your home IP address.
Right. And so the reason I know what it is because I have checked out the dark web because I've, you know, wanted to have some handle on what it was before I handed my kids a phone and was like, go. And also, I have friends in Australia and other places who have been known to tap into Netflix with a VPN, that kind of thing. So I'm familiar with the concept, but I've never heard of it being blamed for, like, cloning somebody.
Right. And that's basically what the key witness that Zonis had brought in stated, that yeah, in theory it's possible, but again, as someone who works in an IT field, as a key witness is stating on the stand, that yes, it is possible, I've never seen it happen. So by March 31st, after the testimony of the Allens and the mountain of evidence that they had, the jury came to a decision amounting to a record-setting $8.9 million being awarded for damages.
Oh, shit.
And the way that they came across this, at least according to the Wired article, was that they took each offense that he had done to broken the law and added it up.
Wow. Such a terrible person. I'm like, I'm going to send somebody photos. that's not the right answer at all. Don't do that. Wow. That's a big fucking number.
It's the idea of, yeah, I'll be Shark Lady for $8.9 million. Why not?
I'm saying. that's a big goddamn number.
And it's a big win for both cyber harassment as well as revenge porn in itself, because aside from some major celebrities, this was record setting for just a normal everyday person.
Right. And so revenge porn is not a phrase that we've used in this episode yet. So that is for those not lucky enough to have been involved in any way, through any sort of relationship, through friends, through romantic relationship, through an affair, through whatever it may be, you send suggestive to not safe for work to outright pornographic, however you want to define it, images. Usually it starts out positive, and then something goes bad in the relationship. And that may be between the two people that are exchanging images, or it may be from outside forces. And those images are used as retaliation. So it's not like, there are some people who think revenge porn means like it's taken as revenge. No, it's taken, it's created usually in a positive way, but it's the use of it after the fact that is vengeful.
And the really interesting thing about revenge porn is that it's also term lumped into different things, which maybe this is something we'll cover later on in another story or another episode even. But when it goes to the Fappening, which was the big leak of celebrity pictures from hacked accounts, a lot of the claims were revenge porn in that against the ones who were distributing the pictures, when in reality, they didn't really have a tie to the celebrities at all. They were just looking to make a quick dollar.
Right. And that's going to have to be a separate episode, because I don't think most people have heard of it. And that's where you and I come in, is that things that are sort of normal to you, like you've heard on the street through your friends, whatever, are just like in the true crime field. It's funny how little familiarity people have with the technology that we're using every day. You know, like we know about murder, we know about serial killers, but we don't know about the thing that we're using to listen to the murder and the serial killers.
This was a story, like I had mentioned, it kind of hit close to home. I didn't know about it when it happened. And keeping in mind, 2012, it's not like I was super young or anything. I was an adult. I would read tons of tech news sites. And I never came across this until just this year.
Okay, I need to know something about this, the outcome of this story. Are Courtney and Steven still married?
They are.
Fuck!
They have claimed that, you know, despite everything, this has helped them grow stronger together.
No,
all the sappy bullshit.
No.
Maybe they adopted a shark. Maybe that's what's keeping them together. I don't know.
I was going to say, no, bad shark. No. Okay, fine. Nice. Lovely. Steven and Courtney, that's lovely. And you're pushing up on 10 years now, so I don't even care what that anniversary is, but go celebrate it. But no, that should not have a happy ending. And that, you know, like, it's probably happy for them, but I hate that it is.
Yeah, and that's the realization I came to. Like, obviously, I feel for the victims in this story. It's shitty that they had to go through all of that. But on the other hand, aside from the normal victim blaming that, you know, they ran into with the trial, you're also a bunch of assholes. And I'm sorry to say that, because yes, you had to deal with the shitty thing, but that doesn't exonerate you.
Exactly. You're still an asshole.
And so I had a lot of mixed feelings when I started really digging into this case of, this shouldn't have happened to them. And I feel bad that it did, but I don't feel bad for them.
It didn't happen to them. It happened by them.
Right.
And that's, I think, an important difference, is that, you know, if it was a case of Courtney and Todd had the affair, and there's degrees of should, shouldn't, I don't care. Like, that's their choice, they're adults. Okay. And if it had been a simple case of Steven came along, scooped shit out of their email, and splashed it all over the internet, I feel bad for Courtney, and I feel bad for Todd. Like, if that's the story.
Yeah.
But that's not the story here. The story here is three adults acting badly, behaving like assholes. I don't want any of them to win. Like, I'm so glad that the labeled victim in a case was compensated. Like, that's a good thing from my point of view. That being said, Courtney's, I don't like it. I don't like her.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll be right back.